welcome to Beautiful But Deadly, with a beauty of makeup.
Meets the horror of true crime.
With Chuck.
And Liz.
We've only been doing this podcast for a year.
So, this is part two of Ed Kemper.
So jumping straight into this.
Okay. Trigger warnings. Sexual assault, rape, murder, necrophilia, cannibalism, and child sexual assault.
It's never a good sign when you go, cannibalism.
Well, we'll see why. Okay, so between May 1972 and April 1973, Kemper killed 8 people. He would pick up female students who were hitchhiking and take them to isolated areas where he would shoot, stab, smother, or strangle them. He would then take their bodies back to his home where he decapitated them, performed irrematio on their severed heads, we'll get to that, had sexual intercourse with their corpses, and then dismembered them. During his 11-month murder spree, he killed 5 college students, 1 high school student, his mother, and his mother's best friend. Kemper stated in interviews that he often searched for victims after having arguments with his mother and that she refused to introduce him to women attending the university where she worked. He recalled, she would say, "You're just like your father. You don't deserve to get to know them." Psychiatrist and Kemper himself have espoused the belief that young women were surrogates for his ultimate target, his mother.
I mean, she's not wrong saying that he probably doesn't deserve them, and also that's weird. Like, can you imagine if, like, a teacher or someone that worked at your college was like, "So, I have a son." That's weird enough, and then you show up and it's Ed Kemper.
Facts. There's Marianne Pesch and Anita Luchessa. So, Anita, on May 7, 1972, Kemper was driving in Berkeley, California, when he picked up 2 18-year-old hitchhiking students from Fresno State University. Marianne Pesch and Anita Mary Luchessa, with the pretense of taking them to Stanford University. After driving for an hour, he managed to reach a secluded wooded area near Alameda, California, which he was familiar with from his work at the highway department, without alerting the 2 girls that he had changed directions from where they wanted to go. It was there that he handcuffed Pesch and locked Luchessa in the trunk. Then stabbed and strangled Pesch to death, and then killed Luchessa in a similar manner. Kemper later confessed that while handcuffing Pesch, he brushed the back of his hand against one of her breasts, and it embarrassed him, adding that he said, "Whoops, I'm sorry," or something like that, after grazing her breast, and then he went on to kill her minutes later.
That's so odd. Yeah. Like, so many killers have something like that, where they're, like, straight up murder someone, but then they'll have that one little thing that's like, "Oh, that was like, oopsie. So sorry.
Kemper put both of the women's bodies in the trunk of his Ford Galaxy and then returned to his apartment, which, if you remember, the Ford Galaxy is the one he got after his accident. He was stopped on the way by a police officer for having a broken taillight, but the officer did not detect the girls' bodies in the car. I feel like that happens a lot, too.
Near misses?
Yeah. Like, it happened with, Bundy.
Mm-hmm.
Kemper's roommate was not at home, so he took the bodies into his apartment, where he photographed and had sexual intercourse with the naked bodies before dismembering them. He then put the body parts into plastic bags, which he later abandoned near Loma Prieta Mountain. Before disposing of Pesch's and Luchessa's severed heads in a ravine, Kemper engaged in irrematio. I'm probably not saying that right. It's basically oral sex with both of them. In August of that year, Pesch's skull was found on Loma Prieta Mountain. An extensive search failed to turn up the rest of Pesch's remains or a trace of Luchessa. Okay, so his next victim is Echo Koo. I hope I'm saying that correct. On the evening of September 14th, 1972, Kemper picked up a 15-year-old dance student named Echo Koo, who had decided to hitchhike to a dance class after missing her bus. He again drove to a remote area where he pulled a gun on Koo before accidentally locking himself out of his car.
What a dumbass.
However, she let him back inside, despite the fact that the gun was still in the car. So back inside the car, he proceeded to choke her unconscious, rape her, and kill her.
Echo, no!
Yeah.
Why couldn't she just drive away?
I feel like she doesn't know how to drive. She's 15.
You could figure it out.
Well. Kemper subsequently packed Koo's body into the trunk of his car and went to a nearby bar to have a few drinks. I'm wondering if it was the jury room.
Probably.
Then returned to his apartment. He later confessed that after exiting the bar, he opened the trunk of his car, admiring his catch like a fisherman. Back at his apartment, he had sexual intercourse with her body, then dismembered and disposed of the remains in a similar manner as his previous 2 victims. Ku's mother called the police to report the disappearance of her daughter and put up hundreds of flyers asking for information, but she did not receive any responses regarding her daughter's location or status. Cindy Shaw. On January 7th, 1973, Kemper, who had moved back in with his mother at this point, was driving around the Cabrillo College campus when he picked up 18-year-old student Cynthia Ann Cindy Shaw. He drove to a wooded area and fatally shot her with a .22-caliber pistol. He then placed her body in the trunk of his car and drove to his mother's house, where he kept her body hidden in a closet in his room overnight. When his mother left for work the next morning, he had sexual intercourse with and removed the bullet from Shaw's body, then dismembered and decapitated her in his mother's bathtub.
I was thinking to myself, why would he remove the bullet? But now I understand. If they were to find it, they could probably connect it to his gun, to him.
Yep.
Does he say why he kept switching up, like, the MO as to, like, how he killed them?
No, he doesn't really, as far as I've seen, go over it. I think it's just more of, like, things that he wished he could do to his mother.
All right.
He's probably fantasized about killing his mom different ways multiple times, if I had to guess.
That's fair.
Yeah. Kemper kept Shaw's severed head for several days, regularly engaging in urumashio with it, then buried it in his mother's garden, facing upward toward her bedroom. After his arrest, he stated that he did this because his mother always wanted people to look up to her, which to me seems too on the nose. Like, maybe he's, like, playing a part, you know what I mean?
Yeah, more than, like, having it be a personal thing that he knows. He's like, this would be a great story.
Yeah, exactly.
This will be a real gotcha moment in the story of my life. Or maybe he, like, cooked that up. That's, like, reasoning later.
That's why he put it there?
Yeah, like that.
Yeah, he's like, oh, actually.
He's like, I had a gotcha moment. Yeah. Fuck you, Mom.
Exactly. He's like, this is going to be great in the story later.
How else can I dunk on my mom after death?
He discarded the rest of Shaw's remains by throwing them off a cliff. Over the course of the following few weeks, all except her head and right hand were discovered and pieced together like a macabre jigsaw puzzle. A pathologist determined that Shaw had been cut into pieces with a power saw. That sounds messy. Rosalind Thorpe and Allison Liu. On February 5th, 1973, after a heated argument with his mother, are we shocked at this point? Kemper left his house in search of possible victims. With heightened suspicion of a serial killer preying on hitchhikers in the Santa Cruz area, students were advised to accept rides only from cars with university stickers on them.
Oh, no.
Kemper had been able to obtain such a sticker as his mother worked at the University of California, Santa Cruz.
I have a question. You might like to talk about it later, whatever. Did his mom know before she died that he was a killer?
I don't think she... Like, maybe she had her suspicions, but I don't think she, like, knew.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was gonna say, can you imagine finding out that, like, your son was just out murdering people because he pissed him off?
I mean, to be fair, it's not like it's the first time he murdered. He killed his fucking grandparents. So technically she did know he's a murderer.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah. You got me there.
Okay. So he encountered 23-year-old Rosalind Heather Thorpe and 20-year-old Alice Helen Allison Liu on the UCSC campus. According to Kemper, Thorpe entered his car first, reassuring Liu to also enter. He first fatally shot Thorpe and then Liu with his .22-caliber pistol and wrapped their bodies in blankets. Kemper again brought his victims back to his mother's house. This time, he beheaded them in his car and carried the headless bodies into his mother's house to have sexual intercourse with them. He then dismembered the bodies, removed the bullets to prevent identification, and discarded their remains the next morning. Some remains were found at Eden Canyon a week later, and more were found near Highway 1 in March. When questioned in an interview as to why he decapitated his victims, he explained, "The head trip fantasies were a bit like a trophy. You know, the head is where everything is at. The brain, eyes, mouth, that's the person. I remember being told as a kid, you cut off the head and the body dies. The body's nothing after the head is cut off. Well, that's not quite true. There's a lot left in the girl's body without the head."
Thank you for the astute observation, Edmund.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
I feel so enlightened now.
Just in case you didn't know.
But that's not true. There's still things in the body. Really?
Wait a second.
Who knew?
Like, he is very intelligent, as we know. But sometimes he says shit, and it's like... I think it sounds like he's trying so hard to sound intelligent.
I think with some people like that, they know they're more intelligent, but they don't know what about them makes them more intelligent. So for him, he might be like, oh, this is going to blow their minds. Because he has no concept of how smart the actual average person is.
That's a good point.
And I don't even know if he's trying to sound smart as much as he's trying to sound, like, philosophical.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you put deep. It better. Yeah. Yeah,
I like, he's like, I'm a person in here. I'm not just a meat suit.
So then, Clarnell.
Clarendon.
Clarendon and Sally. On April 20th, 1973, after coming home from a party, 52-year-old Clarnell Elizabeth Stramberg.
Whoa, she was only 52? She must have had him young.
Yeah. I mean, didn't they always back in the day?
That's fair, but she was younger than Mom.
Well, shit. On April 20th, 1973, after coming home from a party, 52-year-old Clarnell Elizabeth Stramberg awakened her son with her arrival. While sitting in her bed reading a book, she noticed Kemper enter her room and said to him, I suppose you're going to want to sit up all night and talk now? Kemper replied, no, good night. He then waited for her to fall asleep, then snuck back into her room to bludgeon her with a claw hammer and slit her throat with a penknife. He then decapitated her and engaged in arimatio with her severed head, then used it as a dartboard, as you do.
But like, why did she have to have such like a mean response? I suppose you're going to want to sit up and talk all night? Yeah, I'm sure they did that a lot. I really do conversations, her and Edmund.
Kemper stated that he put her head on a shelf and screamed at it for an hour, threw darts at it, and ultimately smashed her face in. He also cut out her tongue and larynx and put them in the garbage disposal. However, the garbage disposal could not break down the tough vocal cords and ejected the tissue back into the sink. That seemed appropriate, Kemper later said, as much as she'd bitched and screamed and yelled at me over so many years. Kemper then hid his mother's corpse in a closet and went to drink at a nearby bar. Upon his return, he invited his mother's best friend, 59-year-old Sarah Taylor Sally Hallett, over to the house to have dinner and watch a movie.
Why?
When Hallett arrived, Kemper strangled her to death to create a cover story that his mother and Hallett had gone away together on vacation.
Could his mother not have gone on vacation by herself?
Apparently not. I got nothing.
This poor woman. So she was murdered for a shitty cover story?
Yeah.
All right. Every murder has no reason, but this one really has no reason. Usually the murderer can come up with something that at least sounds half oh, okay, they really believe that. Really? A cover story and not even a good one?
Yep. Then it gets better. Just wait.
Oh, God.
He subsequently put Hallett's body in the closet, obscured any outward signs of a disturbance, and left a note to the police. It read, approximately 5:15 a.m., Saturday. No need for her to suffer anymore at the hands of this horrible, murderous butcher. It was quick, asleep, the way I wanted it. Not sloppy and incomplete, gents. Just a lack of time. I've got things to do.
Wait, so he wrote a note, and what did he do with it?
Left it with the body.
But what about his cover story? What's happening?
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Just wait. Afterward, Kemper fled the scene. He drove nonstop to Pueblo, Colorado, taking caffeine pills to stay awake for over 1,000 miles. He had 3 guns and hundreds of rounds of ammunition in his car, and he believed he was the target of an active manhunt. After not hearing any news on the radio about the murders of his mother and Hallett, when he arrived in Pueblo, he found a phone booth and called the police. He confessed to the murders of his mother and Hallett, but the police did not take his call seriously and told him to call back at a later time. Several hours later, Kemper called again, asking to speak to an officer he personally knew. He confessed to that officer of killing his mother and Hallett, then waited for the police to arrive and take him into custody, where he also confessed to the murders of 6 students. So why did he even kill the best friend then? If he was just going to turn himself in anyway.
For a cover story.
For a cover story.
How nuts did the police have to be? Like, they were so fucking lucky that he called back.
Yeah, they're like, you didn't do it.
Oh, you crazy.
You crazy.
Come back later. No, literally. Edmund.
What a crazy guy.
What a jokester.
Fucking idiots.
Like, what if he hadn't called back and murdered more people?
Yep.
The bar is in hell. The bar is in hell.
Yep, so low, it's in hell. When asked in a later interview why he turned himself in, Kemper said the original purpose was gone. It wasn't serving any physical or real or emotional purpose. It was just a pure waste of time. Emotionally, I couldn't handle it much longer. Toward the end there, I started feeling the folly of the whole damn thing, and at the point of near exhaustion, near collapse, I just said to hell with it and called it all off.
Oh, you poor baby.
You poor boy.
He was getting tired.
He's so tired.
Tell that to Hellette.
Like, that poor bitch thought she was coming over to just have a good time, watch a movie.
And she was murdered for no reason.
For literally no reason, because he just turned himself in.
I like how everyone else would either to like take anger out from his mother or his mother, and then Sally was just like there.
Yeah. And it's like, why even say, oh yeah, it was for the cover story? Why wouldn't you just say it was because it was your mother's best friend?
Or just because he wanted to. That would make more sense. Just like, I felt like it.
Like, everything he did, he says it's a cover story, but then all the subsequent things that happened didn't fucking add up.
And then the little baby got tired, so he had to go to prison.
So he had to go.
He had to go to prison.
He went through hats in a cot, maybe. I don't know. Okay, so now I'll be reading a little bit from the book, The Killer Book of Serial Killers, by Tom Philbin and Mike Philbin, which I've been using for like all my episodes, but I really like this book.
Isn't there someone else with the last name Philbin?
Yeah.
Regis.
Yeah, Regis.
Any relation?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I don't think so. I think I've looked it up before and they don't. Okay. So, later Kemper would state, in the documentary Murder, No Apparent Motive, that he realized his true rage was towards his mother. I think we knew that. He felt that once he resolved this, that he would be able to stop killing symbols of his mother. In fact, after his mother's murder, he picked up a couple of girls and, instead of taking them to some lonely area to kill them, simply dropped them off where they wanted to go. When he described the killing of his mother in the documentary, he wept. He said he had actually loved her, difficult as that was to imagine. He said that he did not come out from under a rock, nor was he born to a mule. He came out of his mother's vagina. It's a weird thing to say, but... like, it's something normal people don't say.
I feel like even if you were to jokingly say something like that, you wouldn't be like, vagina. Vagina.
My mom's vagina.
Do you mean vagina? I meant what I said.
Oh my god. I don't know. Do you believe him that he loved his mom? Because I feel like...
I think there is a part of every abused child that at the end of the day just wants their parents' approval.
Mm.
And I think that can be misconstrued as love.
Interesting. Okay.
Because, like, why else would you want their approval?
Yeah, that's a good point. So Kemper said that the last night of her life, his mother was still doing, you know, the whole emasculating him thing.
I would love, like, an example of what he thinks emasculation is.
Me too. I guess being called a real weirdo, maybe?
Listen, being a weirdo is unisex, much like the Hammer of Justice.
I hate you. So, Kemper was once asked, what do you think when you see a pretty girl walking down the street?
Who asked that?
Well, they did interviews.
J-17.
No, bitch! Fucking John Douglas!
What do you think when you see a pretty girl?
I hate you.
What's like your type, bud?
Jesus Christ.
Oh, wait, is J-14 a 17?
Fuck, I didn't even realize you fucked that up. I went with it. Tiger Beat, maybe?
I used to read all
of that stupid shit.
Well, Tiger Beat. Did they do one of those,
your star sign?
One of those tests?
I hate you.
One of those flow charts?
Oh my god.
Should I keep that in?
Yes, you should. That was pretty good off-course stuff. Okay, he replied, one side of me says, I'd like to talk to her, date her. The other side of me says, I wonder what her head would look like on a stick.
Why does that side always win? Why can't it be like the normal side?
Oh my god. So apparently when he called the police, he told them, pick me up and put me in jail now or I will kill more.
I don't like ultimatums. Haven't you read that those aren't good in a relationship?
So Kemper was indicted on 8 counts of first-degree murder on May 7th, 1973. who was assigned the chief public defender of Santa Cruz County, Attorney Jim Jackson. Due to Kemper's explicit and detailed confession, his counsel's only option was to plead not guilty by reason of insanity to the charges. Kemper twice tried to commit suicide in custody. His trial went ahead on October 23, 1973. Three court-appointed psychiatrists found Kemper to be legally sane. One of the psychiatrists, Dr. Joel Fort, investigated his juvenile records and the diagnosis that he was once psychotic. Fort also interviewed Kemper, including under truth serum, and relayed to the court that Kemper had engaged in cannibalism, alleging that he sliced flesh from the legs of the victims, then cooked and consumed these strips of flesh in a casserole. Nevertheless, Fort determined that Kemper was fully cognizant in each case and stated that Kemper enjoyed the prospect of the infamy associated with being labeled a murderer. Kemper later recanted the confession of cannibalism.
Yeah, that would seem a little weird.
The cannibalism part?
Yeah. If he ate, like, a tongue or something, that would be like, yeah, that's totally Kemper. But
just to cut a piece of leg off? That doesn't really seem to fit his whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if it wasn't his mom's or something.
Yeah. And I think when they said that, like, he enjoyed the prospect of the infamy associated with being a murderer, that could be why he said that he was a cannibal.
Yeah.
Because you get more, like, press.
Because, like, murders happen every day. Cannibalism on the other hand.
That's different. California used the "am not in" standard, which held that for a defendant to establish a defense on the ground of insanity, it must be clearly proved that, at the time of the committing of the act, the party accused was laboring under such a defect of reason from disease of mind, and not to know the nature and quality of the act he was doing, or if he did know it, that he did not know he was doing that what he was doing was wrong. Kemper appeared to have known that the nature of his acts was wrong, and he had shown signs of malice aforethought, which is the intention to kill or harm, which is held to distinguish unlawful killing from murder. On November 1st, Kemper took the stand. He testified that he killed the victims because he wanted them for myself, like possessions, and attempted to convince the jury that he was insane based on the reasoning that his actions could have been committed only by someone with an aberrant mind.
Abhorrent?
No, A-B-E-R-R-A-N-T.
You learned something every day.
He said that two beings inhabited his body and that when the killer personality took over, it was kind of like blacking out. On November 8th, go ahead.
Why do they always go for the split personality defense? Yeah. You're not Norma Bates. They're like, how do we prove that I'm crazy?
I've got it.
D-I-D.
There's two of me.
There's two of me. It wasn't me. It was the other me.
It was my evil twin.
Yeah. I was crazy at the time. It was him. Why do so many people say that? Like,
it's easy, I guess.
Homie, it's you. It's you.
Only you. That was beautiful. On November 8th, 1973, the six-man, six-woman jury deliberated for 5 hours before declaring Kemper sane and guilty on all counts. He asked for the death penalty, requesting death by torture.
Excuse me?
Yes.
Can you imagine being the judge? That's like a record scratch. What?
What?
Did you speak? Torture?
5 seconds ago, you said you weren't guilty based on insanity. And now you just want to be tortured to death?
How would you even measure that?
Yeah.
I mean, they can't bring in his mother, so is anything really torture?
However, with a moratorium placed on capital punishment by the Supreme Court of California, he instead received 7 years to life for each count, with these terms to be served concurrently, and was sentenced to the California medical facility.
He kind of got what he wanted. That's torture.
Fucked.
It's very drawn out, but it's torture.
Yeah, that is true. In the California medical facility, Kemper was incarcerated in the same prison block as other notorious criminals, such as Herbert Mullen and Charles Manson.
Herbert.
Kemper showed particular disdain for Mullen, who committed his murders at the same time and in the same area as Kemper. He described Mullen as just a cold-blooded killer, killing everybody who he saw for no good reason, as opposed to...
A good reason, mommy issues, yeah, obviously.
Apparently.
Except for Sally.
Whoops, Sally.
I still have no idea why he kills her.
Yeah. Kemper manipulated and physically intimidated Mullen, who, at 5'9", was more than a foot shorter than Ed.
That is crazy. Yep.
Ed Kemper stated that Mullen had a habit of singing and bothering people when somebody tried to watch TV, so I threw water on him to shut him up. Then, when he was a good boy, I'd give him peanuts. Herbie liked peanuts.
Is he an elephant?
Apparently. That's what they call him, Herbie. Herbie liked peanuts.
Like an elephant, I gave him peanuts when he was a good boy.
That was effective, because pretty soon, he asked permission to sing. That's called behavior modification treatment. Because he gave Herbie peanuts.
Is Herbie an elephant? Genuine question. Where did he get peanuts?
They must have had it for a snack.
Did Herbie pick him up with his trunk too? Oh, like, my what? God. I'm sorry. Where do you get the idea to train a human with peanuts?
I got nothing. Throw water on him and then give him peanuts.
And I like how Ed thinks that he was asking permission to sing because of the peanuts, not because he was afraid of him.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, it was the peanuts, guys. Have you never read about How It Loves Dogs?
Because of behavior modification? Thank you. Because I'm very smart.
It's like dog training.
Ugh.
It's not because I physically intimidated him, because I'm a gigantic person. Because I'm a
big bitch. No, that's not it.
That's wild, Renee. That's wild.
Kemper remains among the general population in prison and is considered a model prisoner. He was in charge of scheduling other inmates' appointments with psychiatrists and was an accomplished craftsman of ceramic cups. Why do these people keep letting him do things?
Do you think he talks with Herbie's therapist? Like, dude... Here's what I've been doing. I think you should take some notes.
Yeah, give him some peanuts.
Give him some peanuts.
Throw some water on him. He'll be fine.
Model prisoner. God.
He was also a prolific reader of audiobooks for the blind. A 1987 Los Angeles Times article stated that he was the coordinator of the prison's program and had personally spent over 5,000 hours narrating books with several hundred completed recordings to his name.
Do you think he's on audio?
He could be. I'm trying to think. I had heard of some books that he had narrated. I think he did children's books, but I think he also maybe did one of Flowers in the Attic, but don't quote me on that.
I feel like that just shouldn't be allowed.
That's fine.
That should not be allowed. Who did this? Why are they letting him do things?
That's what I'm saying.
This man wanted to be tortured to death.
He was a fucking murderer, and they're like, do you want to make appointments for other inmates?
Do you want peanuts to train the other inmates?
He has since retired from these positions in 2015 after he experienced a stroke and was declared medically disabled. He received his first rules violation report in 2016 for failing to provide a urine sample. While imprisoned, Kemper has participated in a number of interviews, including a segment in the 1982 documentary, The Killing of America, as well as an appearance in the 1984 documentary, Murder, No Apparent Motive. His interviews have contributed to the understanding of the mind of serial killers. FBI profiler John Douglas described Kemper as among the brightest prison inmates he interviewed and capable of rare insight for violent crime. Kemper is forthcoming about the nature of his crimes and has stated that he participated in the interviews to save others like himself from killing. At the end of his Murder, No Apparent Motive interview, he said, "There's somebody out there that is watching this and hasn't done that, hasn't killed people, and wants to, and rages inside and struggles with that feeling. Or so sure they have it under control. They need to talk to somebody about it. Trust somebody enough to sit down and talk about something that isn't a crime. Thinking that way isn't a crime. Doing it isn't just a crime. It's a horrible thing. It doesn't know when to quit, and it can't be stopped easily once it starts." He also conducted an interview with French writer Stéphane Bourgoin in 1991. I totally butchered that, but that's fine. Kemper was first eligible for parole in 1979. Kemper was first eligible for parole in 1979. He was denied parole for that year, as well as at parole hearings in 1980, 1981, and 1982. He subsequently waived his right to a hearing in 1985. He was denied parole at his 1988 hearing, where he said, "Society is not ready in any shape or form for me. I can't fault them for that." He was denied parole again in 1991 and 1994. He then waived his right to a hearing in 1997 and in 2002. He attended the next hearing in 2007, where he was again denied parole. Prosecutor Ariadne Simmons said, "We don't care how much of a model prisoner he is, because of the enormity of his crimes." Kemper waived his right to a hearing again in 2012. He was denied parole in 2017 and is next eligible in 2024. But with the theme that they're, going with now, I doubt he's going to get paroled.
I feel like he knows, which is rare, how bad he is.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is so interesting. The fact that he doesn't even want to try to get out. It's almost like
yeah, he doesn't really try too hard.
His, like, goal in life to kill his mom is done.
Do you think he would kill again? Or do you think he's done now that he killed Clarnell?
Yes, but it's like his purpose is done.
Ah, I see. I see now.
Because he still talks about how he has, like, urges and stuff, but I feel like his reason is gone.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys. That was fun.
Now we're moving on to my section.
Which is?
For the makeup section, I shall be discussing... Disgusting? Yes.
What?
I shall be discussing the tempting Kylie Cosmetics A Nightmare collection. It's Kylie Cosmetics partnering with A Nightmare on Elm Street to create a collection. And it is tempting. Like, the PR box is a VHS tape.
Oh, that looks so nice.
This is Kylie by A Nightmare. And the inside looks like cartoon burnt flesh.
Wow, that looks really cool.
Okay. So first, there is a pack of three lipsticks called the Lip Shine Lacquer Set. They're creamy and comfortable, highly pigmented, high shine finish, argan oil infused for lip caring properties. The actual lipstick tube has the Kylie by A Nightmare thing and blood splatters all over it.
That looks really cool. Damn, if I wasn't poor right now, maybe it's for the best.
And they're pretty basic, but also very pretty colors.
Yeah, they're nice. Wow.
And the shades are Elm Street, Only a Dream, and Never Sleep Again.
I really like those. Me.
And next we have the palette. It is a pressed powder palette. And there's 12 shades and 3 finishes, matte, metallic, and glitter.
Why is that a palette?
Okay, yes, here are all of the shade names. Face Your Fears, Elm Street, Alive But Dead, I'll Be Your Nightmare, Stay Up Late, He's Coming, Come to Freddy, Dream Demon, Don't Fall Asleep, Springwood High, Bad Dream, Gonna Get You.
It is a little weird, though, that she's doing a collab.
That's what a lot of people are saying.
Like, it seems very out there.
And, like, in her
pretty
promotional video, it was her... like sexy with blood all over her, like dumping all over her. So people were like, is it a Carrie collection?
Fucked.
Like Carrie with a K.
I hate it.
I thought that would have fit.
That would have been great.
Like, I get Kruger starts with a K, but like Kruger's nowhere on this.
Facts.
Honestly, my personal favorite packaging is for the lashes called Slashes.
No.
Yep.
I love it.
The outside has blood splatters and like a shadow figure of Freddy Krueger.
I love that.
It's so good. It shouldn't be this good.
That's all I'm saying.
And this is what the eyelashes look like.
Not bad. Not bad.
They're like pretty
basic.
Okay. They're basic. They're not unnatural, but at the same time, I wouldn't put them on because they weren't natural enough.
Yeah, that's fair.
But they don't scream Halloween lashes to me. They just seem like pretty lashes.
Yeah.
It has a clear blend. Yes.
Me too.
It has a clear band, which I like.
And yeah.
Those personally. And then lastly, there's a lip and cheek jelly stain.
Interesting. Wow.
It looks like fake blood, honestly. Does. Like prop fake blood. It's so cute.
How much is it for the PR box?
I don't think it's actually come out yet.
Oh.
So I don't know, but I will see when it comes out. It launches Tuesday, October 12th at 3 p.m. PST.
What's today?
What's 3 p.m. PST? Isn't that 2 hours
Pacific time. No, it's 3 hours behind us.
3 hours behind us. So 6 o'clock tonight. Wow. Wow. So maybe I'll be able to insert some prices the editing process. Perhaps. But I'm so tempted.
It's beautiful.
I'm so tempted. Like, if I had money, let me tell you.
Me! That's what I'm saying.
But I don't.
If I had a job right now, it'd be over for you hoes.
Do you need another job? This is our job.
I hate you.
Is it not?
It's kind of.
Are you not taking this seriously?
It's not a full-time job. It certainly doesn't pay like a job.
Oh. You really hit me where it hurts, Lizzie. That's why you guys should tell your friends, so this could be a full-time job. We can upload more.
Yep.
Better, longer episodes. Mm-hmm. And we won't be complaining about being poor every time. We could actually buy cosmetics. Think about it this way. Buy cosmetics to review instead of just being like, that looks really nice.
Yeah, exactly.
If I had money, I'd buy that.
Oh my god.
So,
we're sick.
You're sick. I want it. I'll post photos to my our Instagram. Pardon me. Our Instagram.
I thought,
And yeah. Wow. That was it for us for this little episode that we're dropping in here.
Extra episode.
All right.
Thanks for listening as always.
I think we're going to take a nap.
Yes. I'm fucking tired.
Yes, thank you for listening. If you would like to leave us a review, that would be very nice.
I would
we appreciate
forever.
It.
Please email us because I would love to talk to some people.
Yeah, even if it's hate mail.
Oh my god. Follow us on Instagram at
Beautiful But Deadly Podcast.
Pod or podcast, whichever. It's pod. You'll find us. And you can email us at beautifulbutdeadlypodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
That's it, y'all.
Tell your friends about us.
Love
so we
you.
Can build this little family. Maybe we can get a little she shed so there won't be as much noise.
We're thinking about streaming.
So we'll tell you more about that. And we have a lot planned for
October.
The month of October and to celebrate next month.
I love you.
Okay. A little too much. We're really feeding that parasocial relationship this episode, huh? Thank you. Bye.
You know what really trips me up sometimes? Thinking about the fact that there are people out there who actually listen to us and, like, have thoughts and feelings about us, you know? It's weird, man.
They're actually just bots.
Fuck.
Actually bots. Ooh. Maybe I'll put this part, like, the end as, like, a post-credit scene.
Okay.
But it's... What's even more wild for me is the amount of places that listen to us.
Yeah! Do you want to read it for the people?
Yeah.
Let's do this.
So, and, like, if you're from these places, you can be like, hey!
Hey, it's me!
Obviously, the United States, United Kingdom, the Philippines, Canada, Germany, Russia, Australia, India, Kenya, Portugal, Sweden, Hungary, South Korea, Anyang, France, Iran, Montenegro, Switzerland, New Zealand, Spain, Mexico.
So hello people from those countries. We appreciate you listening.
You know what would be fun?
Mm-hmm.
If for our 1 year we learned how to say hello in all of those or something like that. Hello and thank you.
Okay.
It's not that hard. We already know
Let's
some. I mean, like, Australia and the UK.
Hello.
Good eye, mate.
Crocky. No, just me.
We know, like, hola.
Hola. Como
Gracias.
Está?
And, like, yeah.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, that would be cool. Okay. And then we have, so, on Anchor, you probably are about to hear an ad for Anchor, or already did.
It's fine.
But on the Anchor app, they tell you all these analytics, and these analytics from Spotify tell us ages, like 1% of like each age group listens to us. So 0 to 17, 4%. Hello, little babies.
Hello.
Enjoy your youth, I guess.
Me.
18 to 22, 10%. And then 35% of people here are 23 to 27. So
My
your
people.
Age group.
My people.
And then there are people older than us listening to us, which is crazy.
It's really cool.
12% are ages 28 to 34. 23% are ages 35 to 44, 13% are ages 45 to 59, and 2% are older than 60.
Wow. Well, hello, our older listeners. We appreciate you.
Guys, said, well, hello.
Well, hello.
Older listeners. And 90% of you guys are female.
Damn.
9% are male, 1% is non-specified, and 0% so far is non-binary.
Interesting. Let's get our non-binary numbers up, you know?
Yeah, our people. Are they them? Let's get our they them.
The gays and the theys. Let's go.
I got a pain in my chest when you said that.
They're coming for your ass.
And then the platforms, the listening platforms that people listen to us on, 48% are Apple Podcasts, 11% are Spotify, 5% are Podcast Addict. I've never heard of that.
No.
4% Google Podcasts, 4% Overcast, 3% Anchor, 3% Web Browser. 3% Bullhorn, never heard of that.
Never heard of that.
2% Podbean, never heard of that. That's cute.
Right?
17% Other.
I'm shook. Well, I wonder what's in the other category. Where else could they be listening?
I don't know. You tell us, fam. That's 17%. Yeah. Tell us.
And then listening to a song.
Our top episodes. I think this is interesting. Our top episode thus far is Self Defense and Murder, the case of Nikki Adamondo. I believe that's her last name. It doesn't really fully say it. 89 listens.
Damn.
And then followed by Janis Pocket, Jan Broberg Part 1, that's still a trip. Our first episode in episode 22, The Unending Lies of Shannon, aka.
I think Janis Pocket might still be, like, my favorite one. Because it, like, hits close to home, you know?
You're going to like my next case, then. And we have an estimated audience of 22 people so far, so hello.
Hello, friends.
So nice to see ya.
Tell your friends to listen, please. Thank
Tell
you.
Tell your friends about it. To quote The Weeknd.
Yes, thank you.
All right.